A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been watching the Carry On Arms race, and he's got questions. You remember the fishing jacket hack? The one where you wear a vest with 20-plus pockets through security, stuffed with electronics and toiletries, and technically none of it counts as a bag. He wants to know what else is out there. What are the other imaginative, technically legitimate, inspection-safe ways to carry more on your person? And specifically, how far can you push a backpack with pouches and accessories before it stops being one personal item?
This is my kind of question. The fishing jacket was the gateway drug. It proved the concept that worn items occupy a regulatory blind spot. But the ecosystem has gotten a lot more sophisticated since those first TikToks.
Sophisticated is a generous word for a vest with 23 pockets.
Scott-A-Vest sells exactly that. 23 pockets designed specifically for this purpose. It's not a fishing vest at all. It's a travel vest. They've been doing this since before TikTok existed. The thing went viral in 2022 because people realized TSA doesn't count worn clothing as luggage, and suddenly every cubic inch of vest real estate was valuable.
So we're not just talking about one hack. Daniel's asking us to map the whole terrain.
And it's worth mapping, because the incentives have shifted hard. Checked bag fees on major U.S. carriers have gone up 30 to 50% since 2020. You're looking at $35 to $40 for a first checked bag on legacy airlines and $60 plus on budget carriers like Frontier and Spirit. Those same budget airlines now station employees at the gate with physical bag sizers. 18 by 14 by 8 inches is the standard personal item dimension, and if your backpack doesn't slide in, you're paying at the gate.
Which is more expensive than paying in advance.
Considerably. So, the calculus has changed. Every cubic inch of carry capacity you can reclaim is real money. And the core tension, this is what makes the whole thing legally interesting, is that airline contracts of carriage define a personal item as a bag, a thing you carry. Clothing isn't a bag. Wearable storage sits in this gray zone where it's on your body, not in your hands, and the rules haven't fully caught up.
Haven't fully caught up yet?
Right, that's the arms race part, we'll get there. But first, the hack that started it all, the fishing vest, and why it became a symbol.
I still can't get past the image of someone at a security checkpoint wearing what looks like a flotation device made of zippers.
The genius of it's that it works on two levels, level one, TSA. The agency's mandate is security screening, not baggage reinforcement. They don't care if you're wearing 17 pounds of electronics as long as nothing in the scan looks threatening. Level 2, the gate agent. You walk onto the plane wearing the vest, you stow your actual backpack in the overhead, and you sit down. The vest is clothing. Nobody at the gate is trained to count your pockets.
And then, once you're in your seat, the vest comes off and gets folded into the overhead bin.
It's a wearable carry-on that transforms into luggage the moment you're past the enforcement point. The Scott-A-Vest version has pockets designed for specific items. A smartphone pocket with a clear touchscreen compatible window, a tablet pocket, cable routing channels between pockets. It's not a fishing vest with random pouches, it's engineered luggage that happens to have armholes.
So the core insight is the distinction between worn and carried.
That's the whole game, and it opens the door to everything else. Because once you realize that the regulatory line is drawn at, are you holding it or wearing it, you start seeing opportunities everywhere. The fishing vest is just the most conspicuous version.
All right, let's get into the ecosystem. Daniel specifically asked about extending a backpack with pouches and accessories, pushing the personal item without crossing into second bag territory.
So there are really four categories here, and they escalate in audacity. Category 1 is modular backpack expansion using MOLLE systems. MOLLE, that's modular lightweight load, carrying equipment, started as military webbing. It's a grid of nylon straps sewn onto a bag's exterior. You weave pouches through the straps, and they become physically attached to the bag.
And the argument is that an attached pouch is part of the bag, not a separate item.
That's the argument. Brands like GORUCK have brought this into the consumer travel space. Their GR2 backpack has a base capacity of 34 liters. Add a Molly water bottle pouch, a field pocket for tech, maybe a small admin pouch on the front. You're looking at roughly 45 liters total, but it's still one backpack. The pouches are integrated into the webbing system.
45 liters is a serious amount of capacity. That's approaching carry-on suitcase territory.
It is, and the key to making this work, this is where the travel subculture has really refined the technique, is using what's called one-wrap Velcro instead of clips or carabiners. Clips dangle, carabiners swing. A Velcro strap wraps tight against the bag's surface and makes the attachment look seamless. From 5 feet away, a pouch secured with matching one wrap reads as part of the bag's construction.
So it's camouflage.
Literally and metaphorically. Black Cordura pouch on a black Cordura backpack, it disappears. Bright orange dry bag strapped to a gray backpack, that's going to catch a gate agent's eye, and now they're counting items.
What's category two?
Category 2 is what I'd call the personal item personalizer. This is a slim front panel pocket that clips into a backpack's existing compression straps. Brands like Tom Benn and Matador sell these as accessories for their own bags. The panel adds maybe 3 to 5 liters of capacity to the front of the backpack, and it's sold as part of the bag's ecosystem. It's an accessory for the bag, not a standalone item.
The legal argument being that it's an integrated component.
Right. And it's a stronger argument than the Molly pouch, honestly, because the panel is designed for that specific bag. The compression straps are meant to receive it. It's not a universal attachment, it's a system. The risk, though, is that a gate agent who sees a bulging front panel on an otherwise normal backpack may decide it's a second item regardless of how it's attached. The argument only works if nobody challenges it.
Which is the recurring theme here?
Every one of these methods works perfectly right up until the moment a human being decides it doesn't. That's the failure mode. It's not the rules. It's enforcement discretion.
What's category 3?
Category 3 is wearable storage that isn't a vest. The travel scarf with hidden zip pockets, you can fit a tablet, a phone, cables, a passport. Compression belts with concealed pouches, which are basically money belts, evolved into general storage. Hoodies with kangaroo pockets modified with internal dividers. You can carry a surprising amount in a hoodie if you've sewn elastic loops and mesh pockets into the lining.
Same legal logic as the fishing vest. It's clothing, not luggage.
Same logic, but less conspicuous. A fishing vest screams, "I'm carrying things." A hoodie with stuff in the pockets just looks like a hoodie with stuff in the pockets. Nobody at the gate is going to ask you to remove your hoodie and put it in the sizer.
Although, if you're wearing a hoodie stuffed with electronics in August, that raises different questions.
The seasonal limitation is real. The fishing vest hack peaks in winter for a reason. Layers are normal, bulk is expected. You try walking through Phoenix Sky Harbor in July wearing 3 stuffed layers, you're going to attract attention for reasons that have nothing to do with baggage policy.
Which brings us to Category 4.
Category 4 is the jacket layering strategy. This is wearing a thin shell jacket with 6 to 8 pockets over a hoodie with 4 pockets, both stuffed. TSA counts worn clothing, not layers. One traveler documented fitting 15 pounds of gear across 3 worn layers and passing through 12 U.S. airports without a single challenge.
15 pounds.
15 pounds. That's a small carry-on's worth of stuff distributed across your torso. The key is density distribution, and this is where the inspection safety constraint gets interesting. If you put all your dense items in one pocket, power banks, cables, a camera, the X-ray or millimeter wave scanner sees an anomalous dense mass. That triggers a bag check. So the hack is to distribute dense items across multiple pockets and layers so no single pocket looks suspicious.
So you're not just optimizing against gate agents, you're optimizing against the physics of the scanner.
And that's the part most people miss. The fishing jacket hack isn't just about the rules, it's about what the machine sees. A vest packed uniformly with electronics creates a block on the scan. The machine can't see through it, so it flags it. Distribute those same electronics across a vest, a hoodie, and a shell jacket, and suddenly each pocket looks like normal pocket contents.
Which is a nice segue into the part nobody talks about, the failure pattern. You mentioned the scanner flagging dense masses. What else goes wrong?
Well, the airlines are starting to close the loophole. Ryanair updated its contract of carriage in 2024 to explicitly state that worn items with storage capacity beyond normal clothing may be counted as cabin baggage. That's a direct shot at the fishing vest. Frontier gate agents now receive training to identify tactical vests and travel vests as potential personal items. The arms race is escalating.
So the window is closing.
On the vest specifically, yes. But the broader principle, worn versus carried, is harder to regulate away. How do you write a rule that distinguishes a hoodie from a storage garment? At what number of pockets does a jacket stop being clothing? These are hard definitional problems, and the airlines haven't solved them.
They've solved it the way most enforcement problems get solved, by giving gate agents discretion and training them to spot the obvious cases.
Right, and that creates a weird incentive structure. The most successful hacks are the least visible ones. The fishing vest went viral precisely because it was comical and visible, but that visibility is what got it regulated. The hoodie with internal dividers, nobody's writing a policy about that because nobody can see it.
So the meta hack is to be boring.
Be boring. Look normal. The traveler who walks through the gate in a plain black hoodie and jeans, carrying a backpack with two matching black pouches seamlessly attached, is carrying 40 liters of capacity and attracting zero attention. The traveler in the fishing vest is carrying about the same amount and getting pulled aside. The difference isn't the rules, it's the theater.
Let's talk about the backpack expansion specifically, because Daniel asked about extending the carry surface with pouches and accessories. How far can you actually push this before it stops being one personal item?
The travel subculture has basically converged on a consensus. On a 25 to 30 liter backpack, 2 to 3 small external pouches is safe. 4 or more, or any pouch that doubles the bag's depth, triggers scrutiny. The failure case is usually a gate agent who sees a backpack that's visibly bulging in 3 dimensions and asks you to put it in the sizer.
And if it doesn't fit?
You're paying the gate check fee, which is typically higher than the advanced check bag fee. Frontier charges something like $75 at the gate, so the downside risk is real.
So the smart play isn't maxing out capacity. It's staying within the sizer dimensions while reclaiming volume that would otherwise be wasted.
That's exactly the right framing. A typical backpack has dead space. The front panel, the sides, the compression straps. Molly pouches and front panels let you fill that dead space without increasing the bag's footprint. A water bottle pouch on the side doesn't make the bag deeper. A slim admin panel on the front adds maybe an inch of depth. As long as the bag still slides into the sizer, you're fine.
What about the more aggressive setups? I've seen photos of backpacks with 4 or 5 pouches hanging off them like a Christmas tree.
Those are the people who get the angry Reddit posts. Gate agent made me consolidate my 6 pouches into 1 bag. And they're shocked, as if attaching a small duffel to the outside of their backpack with carabiners wasn't going to attract attention.
There's a certain type of traveler who treats technically compliance as a magic spell.
And gate agents are the ones who decide whether the spell works. The contract of carriage gives them enormous discretion. Personal item is defined vaguely enough that almost any enforcement action is defensible. The traveler who argues, but the pouches are attached with molly webbing, is technically correct and practically losing.
So what's the most robust system? If you're designing from scratch for a 2-week trip...
The most robust approach isn't one hack, it's a layered system. Start with a 28-liter backpack that fits the sizer empty. Add 2 molly pouches in matching color, 1 water bottle holder, 1 tech organizer, bringing total capacity to about 35 liters. That's your base personal item. Then add a travel hoodie with 6 internal pockets for dense items. Power bank, cables, snacks, documents. Finally, a slim waist pack worn under the jacket for your phone and passport. Total carry capacity is roughly 40 liters, all technically compliant if the backpack fits the sizer and the worn items aren't challenged.
And if the waist pack is under the jacket, it's invisible.
Invisible to the gate agent, yes. The scanner still sees it, but it's a waist pack with a phone and passport. That's normal pocket contents as far as the machine is concerned.
You mentioned earlier that a Ryanair gate agent flagged someone's waist pack. What happened there?
This was documented in 2025. A traveler had the full layered system, backpack with pouches, travel vest, waist pack. The gate agent at Ryanair counted the waist pack as a separate item. The traveler argued it was clothing. The agent didn't care. The waste pack was visible, it was clearly a storage item, and Ryanair's updated policy gave the agent the backing to count it. The traveler had to repack at the gate.
So visibility is the trigger.
Visibility plus policy. Ryanair's contract now explicitly covers this. If your waste pack is under your jacket, it might pass. If it's visible on your hip, it's a second item. The difference is literally whether the agent can see it.
Which makes the whole thing feel less like a regulatory framework and more like a game of hide and seek.
That's what it is. And the airlines are getting better at seeking, but the travelers are getting better at hiding. The matching color MOLE pouch thing, that's a direct response to gate agents being trained to spot extra bags. If it looks integrated, it doesn't register as an extra item.
There's something almost philosophical here. This whole subculture is a response to the unbundling of air travel. Checked bags used to be included. Now they're a $35 add-on. The fishing vest isn't a fashion choice, it's a protest.
It's consumers optimizing against shrinking allowances in real time. The same thing is happening with streaming services cracking down on password sharing, with hotels adding resort fees, with every industry that's discovered unbundling as a revenue strategy. The fishing vest is the physical manifestation of, I won't pay your junk fee.
And the response from airlines is to hire more people to spot the vests.
Which costs them money. There's an irony in spending on enforcement to protect a fee that didn't exist 10 years ago, but the fees are too profitable to give up. Checked bag fees brought in something like $7 billion for U.S. airlines in 2023. That's not revenue they're going to walk away from.
So the arms race continues, which brings us to the thing we've been dancing around, the scanner. You mentioned density distribution. What actually happens when a millimeter wave scanner sees a stuffed vest?
This is where I want to bring in Hilbert, because he's been sitting there with a look on his face for about 10 minutes. Hilbert, you've got experience with this.
11 years.
11 years of what?
Doing the thing you just spent 20 minutes calling impractical. I wear a vest for security, not a fishing vest. A photographer's vest. Black. Looks like something a dad wears to a barbecue. 14 pockets. I've been through 37 airports with it.
And the scanners?
Twice. Twice in 11 years I've been pulled for secondary because the vest was too dense. Both times were winter. I had a power bank, a camera battery, a pack of cards, a sandwich, and a paperback in the front pockets. The machine showed what the agent called a solid torso. Couldn't see through it.
So the vest came off.
Had to remove it. Sent it through the x-ray as a separate item. And then the gate agent, this was at Luton, counted it as a second bag. I had to pay 40 quid at the gate.
For a vest?
For a vest with a sandwich in it. I ate the sandwich at the gate. Still had to pay.
So the vulnerability isn't the rules, it's the physics of the scanner. Modern millimeter wave systems look for anomalies in density distribution. Metal isn't the trigger anymore. A block of organic material, fabric, paper, food, electronics, that's dense enough to absorb the waves instead of reflecting them, that's what flags.
The agent at Luton showed me the screen. My chest was a black rectangle. Everything else was the normal gray blur. She said it looked like I was wearing body armor.
Which, to the machine, you effectively were. Layers of fabric and electronics with no air gap.
The trick, and I learned this after Luton, is to leave gaps. Don't pack the vest like a suitcase. Pack it like you're actually wearing it. A pocket with a power bank, an empty pocket, a pocket with cables, an empty pocket. The machine needs to see through you. If you fill every pocket, you're a wall.
That's the density distribution point we were making earlier, but from direct experience. The scanner doesn't care about airline policy. It cares about whether it can resolve an image of your body. If it can't, you're getting pulled aside regardless of what the contract of carriage says.
I also don't wear the vest through the gate anymore. I wear it through security, then it goes in the backpack before boarding. The gate agent never sees it.
So you're using the vest for the security checkpoint, not the gate.
Security is the bottleneck. The gate agent can be managed. The machine can't be argued with.
That's a really useful distinction. The two enforcement points have different vulnerabilities. TSA cares about security, not baggage policy. Gate agents care about baggage policy, not security. The vest works at TSA because they don't count items. It fails at the gate because gate agents do. So you wear it through security, then it disappears before boarding.
I've got it down to about 90 seconds in the laboratory. Vest off, folded, into the backpack. Backpack still fits the sizer because the vest compresses.
11 years of refinement.
I used to work baggage at Manchester Airport, late 90s. Charter airline, long defunct. People checked massive suitcases. Nobody carried anything except a handbag or a briefcase. The overhead bins were half empty. You could bring a full-size suitcase as carry-on if you could lift it. Nobody charged for anything.
You've watched the whole thing contract.
I've watched them shrink the allowance and charge for what used to be free. The vest is my response. It's not a hack, it's a correction.
And the sandwich?
Ham and cheese. It was a good sandwich.
The arms race continues. The scanners are getting better, the policies are getting tighter, and the travelers are getting more creative. Where does this end?
Ryanair's 2024 policy update suggests we're heading toward explicit regulation of storage garments. The question is whether that regulation can be enforced consistently. A vest with 23 pockets is easy to spot. A hoodie with 6 internal dividers is not. The cat and mouse game favors the mouse when the cat can only see the obvious mice.
The next frontier? You mention luggage as clothing.
The line between what you wear and what you carry is blurring fast. There are already jackets with integrated airbag-style inflation for padding, originally for motorcycle safety, but the same concept could pad out a jacket to carry more without looking bulky. Backpacks that convert into vests. The ultimate expression would be a garment that's your luggage. You wear it through the airport, and when you arrive, you unzip it into a duffel.
Which sounds absurd until you remember that the fishing vest already does exactly that in one direction.
Right. The fishing vest is luggage that converts into clothing. The next step is clothing that converts into luggage. The regulatory framework has no category for that.
The physics problem, the scanner density issue, does that get worse or better as these things evolve?
Better, I think, because the more sophisticated designs will incorporate air gaps and material variations specifically to avoid the solid torso problem. The fishing vest is dumb, it's just pockets. The next generation will be engineered for scanner transparency as well as capacity.
Engineered luggage garments. That's where we're heading.
We're already there. Scotivest's whole product line is exactly that. The only question is how far the engineering goes before the airlines decide to draw a hard line, and whether that line is even enforceable.
Daniel, if you're listening. And I know you are. You've accidentally mapped a microcosm of the whole consumer economy. Shrinking allowances, creative optimization, regulatory response, and a guy at a mixing desk who's been doing it for 11 years with a ham sandwich.
Send us your weird prompts, travel hacks, regulatory gray zones, questions about the hidden rules of everyday life. The address is show@myweirdprompts.com.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently has been running a long-term field test without telling anyone.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.